So good morning, everybody. I am João Antonangelo, a PhD student at Oklahoma State University. Dr. Heine Zhang is my advisor there, and Dr. Luisa Leone is my co-advisor in Brazil at University of São Paulo. Today I'm going to talk about nutrient dynamics in hydrowater soils under long-term no-till system. So you see here that the focus will be on phosphorus and potassium for soybean crop growing in oxisol. So as an introduction, we have this kind of engine that works for any crop, any kind of crop, but in the case of soybean, we have to take into consideration that the phosphorus and potassium fertilization for soybean crops, it's guided by soil analysis, and it has to take into consideration as well the area history and the soil management. So you are seeing here that I'm not going to talk about nitrogen because generally soybean does not require a nitrogen fertilizer application. So this is a soybean crop growing in Brazil in oxisol. It is a hydrowater soil. And when you look back 20 years ago, like the average yield of soybean in Brazil is around 2,600 kilograms per hectare, taking into account many kinds of cultivars and everything. So if you are always trying to increase the yield, we have to apply phosphorus and potassium for soybean. But the long-term application, the continuous application of those kind of elements every year can make them accumulate in soil, and it can cause environmental impacts due to phosphorus losses by runoff or potassium by leaching. But no-till can like minimize these kind of impacts as well. So with that, our objectives were to evaluate the long-term application of P and K fertilizers in oxisol under no-till and see those effects in phosphorus and potassium availability in soil, the plant uptake, and also the yields of two soybean cultivars growing in oxisol under no-till in Brazil. So as material and messages, the experimental area belongs to Londrina, which is in Paraná State in Brazil, the south region, the first state in the south region. And the soil is an oxisol. It's classified according to the soil taxonomy as aquatic aplodox, which is very, very wettered, with 76% of clay from 0 to 2 meters. And then we collected soil in the arable layer, which is 0 to 20 centimeters. It's pretty much similar as 0 to 6 inches here in US. And then since 1989, when the experiment started, it's receiving several weights of phosphorus and potassium fertilizers. So it's like a 28 years experiment. It's a long term. And since 1995-1996, it is under no-till and it started to receive lime application, lime breads. I'm raising the basic saturation to the same level in order to make sure that the differences found would be just related to the rates of phosphorus and potassium applied. So since that time, we had 6 surface applications of lime, which are eventually like 8 to 5 years. And then we extracted phosphorus and potassium by malic one and ionic exchange resin. So first reason of that is because as long as this area belongs to Paraná State, this state widely used malic one as a phosphorus extractor. But the analysis were conducted at University of São Paulo. So in São Paulo, the exchange resin is mostly used. So in addition to that, we tried to see if it would lead to different results at phosphorus and potassium availability, and if it would lead to different kind of recommendations for those fertilizers. So when we used the trifolium nutrient content, we made the digestion by cut the trifolium at the stage R2 in order to see if by analyzing this nutrient content on trifolium, if you could like relate to the yield of soybean. So these are the rates. So you can see here there are 12 treatments And for replications, each replication is a block. But you'd like to focus your attention on these four treatments, 2, 4, 5, 6, with in the sum of the whole year, receiving the same amount of potassium, but different rates of phosphorus. So those are chosen to do the regression analysis for phosphorus. And for the treatments 2, 3, 9, and 10, we did the same thing, but it, in the sum of the whole year, considering the summer crop, which was soybean, and the winter crop, it received the same rates of phosphorus, but different rates of potassium, as you can see here. So the source of potassium was always potassium chloride, and for this agricultural year, very recent one, the source of phosphorus was the triple superphosphate. So these are the results which correlate the all of the points in the for all the treatments and all the replications between Melic 1 and resin. This first graph is for phosphorus, and we got a very good correlationship. However, which was already expected, the resin is extracted generally 3 times more than Melic 1. Resin actually is able to reach some fractions of phosphorus that are available to plant that Melic 1 cannot reach. So we were already expected to see that. However, for phosphorus, even have a very good relationship as well. We could see that the ratio was generally 1:1, like for Melic 1 and for resin. Resin still like tried to extract a little bit more, but generally the ratio was 1:1. And when we are looking for those four rates that I chose for phosphorus, in order to see if the availability of phosphorus for Melic 1 and the resin was responding to the increased rates of application. So we had a trend for phosphorus. It's like an exponential increase for phosphorus, no matter which kind of method you use to extract it. However, for potassium, it had like a quadratic behavior, no matter if it was Melic 1 or resin. So we also did this correlation considering all the 12 treatments, all the replications, or the average of the replications, as you can see those 4 points here. And we also considered just this crop season, this agricultural year, and also the sum of the total amount of phosphorus and potassium that were applied along the 28 years. And the behavior was very similar with very good correlations and very good results of regression analysis. So these 4 rates, no matter if for phosphorus or potassium, reflect very well the trend of the results that we are getting in this experimental area. So after seeing the availability of those elements, we aimed to see the content of those elements according to the phosphorus and potassium rates for 2 soybean cultivars, which were 1010 and 1003, to see if the plant uptake was responding to the increased rates of phosphorus and potassium fertilizers. So we saw that for potassium, the levels, they were increasing with the increased rates, but they were a little bit below, which is considered critical for the soybean in Paraná state. However, for phosphorus, we have the same trend, presented like a quadratic behavior, but some points for the increase, the higher rates, levels of phosphorus were considered high, and the lower rates, like 50 kilograms per hectare, the level are considered adequate. So we know that plants uptake potassium very significantly, like it's the second one after nitrogen, and we also had some relation between the uptake of phosphorus and magnesium, because there is a kind of synergism between both elements, but there is a kind of competition between potassium and magnesium that could explain these kind of results that we are seeing here. So after see the availability of those elements, the plant uptake, now we aim to see the yield of that cultivars. So according to the potassium rates, the cultivars 10, 10, and 1003, they presented the highest yield for one of the lower rates applied, like 50 kilograms per hectare. In this case, the cultivar 1010, it presented average yield even higher than the average that I showed you in the introduction. And the cultivar 1003, it's the higher rate for this, is the highest yield for this cultivar. However, it's a little bit below the average yield of soybean for Brazil in the past 20 years. But it's difference of the cultivar, so that happens. So, but I would like to focus your attention here because the effect of long-term application of potassium and phosphorus fertilizer, we are having like a build-up of those elements, and you don't have to go further, go ahead of 50 kilograms per hectare. Because we saw the same thing for potassium, but just for the cultivar 1010, we are not having any response for the cultivar 1003. But the treatment number 2, it's an equal treatment for the rates of potassium and phosphorus fertilizer, which received one of the lowest rates of phosphorus and also the same rates of potassium. And another thing that is making us very excited about it, we are going to do some other analysis that I'm going to show you next. But for the conclusions of those experiments, we could see that extended resin extracted like 3 times more phosphorus than Melic 1, but for the potassium, the ratio was very similar. And the trifolio content can be, the nutrient trifolio content can be used as an indicator of the level of phosphorus and potassium and try to relate that with the yield. And the optimum yields were, after the long-term application, continuous application, were obtained with one of the lower rates of phosphorus and potassium, which was only 50 kilograms per hectare. After that, the rates were excessive. So even the trifolio content showing that the uptake of phosphorus and potassium were higher for higher rates, so the yield was not increased after that rate. And the soil test for a plant available was important to guide the annual fertilization and to make recommendations for farmers. So as future works, we have brought our samples to the Brazilian Synchrotron Light Lab, which is located in Campinas, because we are aiming to see how the phosphorus fractions would be linked or fixed to very specific minerals, and if the rates during the long-term experimental history, if you would change, because it can be done in atomic and molecular level to see which kind of and the crystallinity of each iron oxide or aluminum oxide is bind phosphorus, and we are still dealing with the results. And you use this software, Athena, which is the software that can make us deal with the spectra and see the phosphorus species in solid state. With that, I would like to thank you everybody for coming. I'm open for questions now.
We have time for one quick question.
Is your standard sampling always zero to 20 centimeters?
Yeah.
In no deal?
Yeah. That's right.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, how do you handle your sample? Do you air dry it or do you analyze it?
Can you?
Oh, if I dried my soil samples before analyze, you mean? Yeah, they were air dried at room temperature before in sieved, in 2 millimeter sieve, before any kind of chemical analysis. This is like a standard procedure.
Okay.